I'm T. Boone Pickens. It's a privilege to speak with the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, not just because he's leading the fight against terrorism, but because he represents the 10th Congressional District in Texas. We talked about the four horsemen of cyber terrorism: Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. The Keystone Pipeline was part of the discussion, and the Saudis' attitude towards the shale boom in the United States, Mexico, and developing some of their oil and gas. And of course, ISIS came into the picture. I began by asking him about energy.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
right now there is no crisis for energy.
You know, I've always thought energy is tied to our security and our foreign policy. And the more energy we can produce in this hemisphere, whether it be Keystone Pipeline, energy production in the United States, we've had an uptick in shale production, as you know, natural gas. We talked a little bit about Mexico and Pemex reform, which hasn't gone as well as we had hoped. But that Northern American Alliance for Energy to get off this Middle Eastern dependency, I think would be a real positive foreign policy for this country.
But you're actually almost off of Mideast oil.
Yeah. I mean,
we are.
I think we're weaning ourselves off. Yeah.
Yeah, you're down now to it's under 3 million barrels a day, close to two. But that at one time was 7.8 million.
Yeah.
Is where we peaked.
Yeah.
And so we've done a tremendous job. But who did that for us? Was it the administration? Was it government?
I think it was the producers.
That's right. Our oil and gas industry is remarkable.
It is. And there's an exciting bill Joe Barton and I have worked on, lifting the ban on crude oil exports.
That's exactly what you should do.
And we think that this would be a boom to our economy, but also on a foreign policy level. You know, we had the European Union ask us privately to lift the ban because they want that.
Sure.
And they want to get off Russian dependence on energy, and this would help.
We want them to get off Russia.
Russia's not our friend right now.
No, that's right.
And we want to help the Europeans out with this. And we also, Mexico wants this crude oil as well. If we could export like we do to Canada, Reagan lift the ban to Canada. We want to lift the ban to Mexico. We want to lift the ban to the entire world.
Sure. We should be in a free market. The producer should be allowed to sell his oil wherever he wants to.
Right.
So if he gets a better market in Europe, so be it. He should have that opportunity. But you want to reduce that arbitrage between Brent North Sea crude, which is Mideast crude, is in that mix, mm-hmm. and West Texas Intermediate. And yeah. We've seen that arbitrage $20 a barrel. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And now you're down to $5 a barrel.
Yeah.
So, and that's good. Keystone Pipeline, you mentioned that.
You know, it's amazing. It makes so much sense. The Canadians want it. The administration decided to pick that as their environmental issue. Well, is it really going to make sense for them to sell that to China, where they're going to refine it in a not so environmentally safe way? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, not at all. And Canada is your friend.
Canada's our friend.
Yeah, and I mean a very good friend. You know, I lived in Canada in the 60s, lived in Calgary and operated in Western Canada and drilled a lot of wells out there. Was very successful. Canada is almost like being in the United States.
Yeah.
But in Canada, they don't have a great use for their oil, so we are perfect for them to be their market for their crude. And it's right here. You can hit it with a rock. We're so close to them.
It's a great partnership. I also chair the U.S.-Mexico congressional delegation. So we got together last time. We brought the Canadians in to talk specifically about this issue, about energy independence in North America, right?
Oh, that's great.
And I think it makes a lot of sense. Now, Mexico did reform Pemex. That was a huge, for them, politically, a big step forward. I think in the practical world, they have a lot more ways to go to reform it, to make it attractive for energy companies to do business down there. Yep. But if they could get around, and I think, of course, the price of oil kind of dropped right when this thing passed. But I do think long term, there's an opportunity there as well. And if we have that partnership between Canada, the United States, and Mexico, they've got the sixth largest offshore reserves sitting there if they would just let the private energy companies do it. And so I think there's a promise for that.
Well, Pemex has been pathetic on finding and developing oil.
Yeah.
You know, it's a country within a country almost.
Yeah.
Pemex, they got two governments down there, Pemex and Mexico. But
it's a national, it's the people's oil, right? It's national.
That's right.
But the legislation was an attempt to open it up to private.
Well, let me
companies.
Offer another angle. You guys on top of this, I mean, pulling Canada in there is perfect. You make an alliance of the three countries, mm-hmm. and we are the market.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Mexico is so underdeveloped, we can give them technical assistance, and I hate to say it, but we also can loan them money. But they don't want us, the United States or anybody else, to have equity in their oil and gas reserves. And that was determined, you remember, in their constitution in 1938.
Yeah.
Okay, and they've stuck with that.
Yeah.
And so what? That's fine. Leave it like that. But go in there and help them, and then we get a payoff loans with the increased production that we get for them.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, that's a formula, right? Sure. And I think they need to provide a little more certainty. They have corruption issues, obviously, but provide more certainty to make it more attractive. They put up a lot of bids, and not very many were fulfilled because it wasn't attractive. They need to make it attractive.
Well, no, they couldn't hardly get anybody to bid on it.
Exactly.
They sure.
And so they got to make it more attractive for the private energy producer. And I think they'll come around. I think people like yourself telling them that, and myself, can transform Mexico. Canada's already there, and of course, you know,
you do that though, Mike. And what happens now? You're creating a lot of jobs in Mexico.
Yeah,
good paying jobs.
Solves a lot of problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, one of my friends in West Texas said, "Pickens, don't do that because you'll pull half the roughnecks that were used in West Texas. They'll go back to Mexico." So no deal is perfect.
Well, you know, when I look at the northern Mexico, probably the most dangerous part of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
with the drug cartels, I think there's an opportunity, and I'm an eternal optimist, but I think if the shale production doesn't stop at the Rio Grande, right?
It doesn't.
It goes into
Mexico.
Eagleford
goes across.
Yeah, and so Eagleford goes across. And so I think, you know, there's a job, economic opportunity for Mexico. That helps with the immigration issue, and it also helps with providing legitimate jobs rather than these young kids going to the drug cartels, which is the only choice some of them have.
Well, sure, they've got a legit job. I don't think everybody wants to be a crook.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to be a crook to eat, I guess.
Yeah.
At northern Mexico's a tough spot. I worked the valley when I got out of school, a geologist, and I worked for Phillips, and I was working in far south Texas. I was working out of McAllen and worked North Star County and all. But that was, you didn't have any problems like that then. You know how long ago that was? That was summer of 1951. So, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But you know, right now, with oil prices down, there's not much focus on oil, as you know. You got to be careful. If I'm saying, well, I'd like to have oil back up to $70 a barrel, and I think you'll be at that point by the end of the year, because you shut down 1,000 drilling rigs in the United States, and so those rigs are not drilling 4, 5, 6, 10 wells a year, and that's going on in production and all, and that's why we actually had declined in 1970. We hit an all-time high for the United States. It was 10 million barrels a day. And from there, we started to decline. Then the embargo came in 73. And then we got on another subject we need to talk about. Along came the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve,
right?
Because we were afraid we were now. And I think the decision made at that point in Washington was a good one, was that, hey, we are depleting our reserves in the United States very fast. And there's no hope we're going to turn that decline curve around. And we went from 10 million barrels down to 4. And then along comes shale.
Yeah.
And then we had the horizontal holes and multiple fracks and everything else.
Right.
But the decision made in Washington back in his early 70s was we're going to have to use Mideast oil, so we better get over there and protect it. And that was the move to get into the Mideast, was protect the oil.
And it drives a very dangerous foreign policy. I mean, if our energy security is dependent on the Middle East, there's no more volatile part of the world, obviously, than the Middle East. And I, as chairman of Homeland Security, I study the threats primarily from that part of the world and try to keep them outside the United States. I mean, everybody knows who ISIS is today. Very brutal. They have their own energy production, as you and I talked about. That funds a lot of their, that finances terrorism.
They got that when they went into Iraq, I think.
And who funded ISIS? Let's be honest. I mean, money came out of the Gulf states to fund a Sunni rebel force against Assad in Syria, and it mutated into ISIS. It became a very extreme Sunni element.
But I don't think that some of those countries that I always felt like when you were buying off the Mideast, some part of those revenues got in the hands of the enemy.
They give it by way of charities. They don't really. Qatar is probably the worst offender. Saudis and UAE pulled their ambassador out of Qatar because of the money that they were sending to fund ISIS.
But they also, it's a form of ransom.
Yeah.
I mean, it keeps them off their back.
So the royal family, just take Saudi, they want to keep the Wahhabis happy. It's a charitable giving thing, but it also funds radicalism in the Middle East. And so, in a way, our consumption of that energy finances terrorism. And so I think your plan all along has been energy independence off of this model.
Get off OPEC oil, that's what I always say.
Off of this model. And it's starting to happen now, and I think with the lifting the ban on crude oil will help us get even further along. But I think this Northern American alliance is really a smart way to go.
Well, you know why the oil price dropped.
Well, OPEC, and we were also producing, and they were producing high. And
well, we went from 4 million barrels up to 9 million.
Yeah.
Okay, they said, this way I read it. They said, okay, big boy, you're now the swing producer.
Yeah.
And if there's a crash here, we're going to produce our oil, and we're going to keep our market share, and you adjust down.
Yeah.
Well, we adjust down in the United States just for economics, which that's the way we adjust in America. When the price of oil went down, you couldn't drill the wells. The return was not good enough to cause you to spend, you know, $5, $10, $15 million to drill a horizontal well. So you just laid down the rigs. So 1,000 of them went down. We will start to decline now.
Well, it's interesting. When I went to Saudi the last time, and in my briefing papers, it said the royal family views the biggest threat is the production of the Eagle Ford Shale, because they know that that's their competition, right?
Sure.
And
it's more than the Eagle Ford does.
And it's just, well, it's shale in general, and so they view that as their competition, their biggest threat. Well,
they tried to break us on this deal.
Yeah.
And they brought down the rigs. But now you tell me the Saudis like $48 a barrel?
No.
They don't like it either.
No.
I say if you don't have oil by the end of the year, $60, the Saudis will cut, because they saw we laid down 1,000 rigs.
Yeah.
So they got results like that. Because you started laying those rigs down a year ago, and they're down, they're mothballed right now. I don't think they believe they could see results like that, because when they make a decision, it's kingdom decides. Over here, economics decides.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the kingdom decides, and we don't really even know what their reserves really are at this point. I mean, it's a
You know what they tell you.
It was classified to them. But, yeah.
It's $250 billion, is what they say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they got much at all. But you know who has $250
billion? It's a poker game.
You know who has $250 billion?
Who?
Canada. And you have that available to you in the Keystone.
Yeah.
And you don't have to pay anything for it. You don't have a Navy there. You don't have anybody getting killed. You're not bombing somebody or anything else.
Yeah.
It's a great relationship.
Well, it's good economic sense, and it's a great foreign policy. And energy security is national security.
It is.
And
that's where
what I do and what you do, I think, ties in directly.
Well, Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of State, she told me, she said, Boone, if your idea works, energy independence, get off of OPEC oil, she said, I can tell you, the State Department will love you, because every negotiation we get in, Mideast oil gets into the conversation or the negotiation at some point.
Well, they've got a choke point. Yep. They have leverage over us, and we need to break that leverage that they have.
Exactly.
And you won't get there unless we have that energy independence. We've been talking about this for so long, your entire lifetime. I think it's time. And I do think lifting the ban on crude oil is going to help, but I think getting a president who will allow the Keystone, a president who can lead in Mexico.
We're going to win, aren't we, next November?
I hope we get the right nominee.
I want to talk to you. Maybe you ought to get in that race.
We need somebody that can pull the party together, not divide it. And I think also somebody that's got an energy policy that makes sense, you know.
Well, don't you think that can develop after, if we win in November, we can get an energy policy
for
America? Yeah.
Well, you're still going to have a Republican-controlled Congress. If we get we win the White House, I think Keystone is, that happens.
Yeah.
Leadership in Mexico, change Pemex, ramp up production in the United States, lift the ban on crude oil exports. There are so many things we can do. And, you talk a lot about natural gas, too, which I think makes a lot of sense. It's plentiful. It's cheap. It's clean.
I did a deal yesterday with the Dallas Morning News. They had a committee, and we talked, and they had questions and everything else. And one of the guys there, he was an environmentalist, and he doesn't want any fossil fuels. And I said, wait a second. I said, 93 million barrels a day you're refining. That's what we're producing in the world, 93 million. And 70% of that goes to transportation fuel. I said, if you didn't have fossil fuels, tell me, what would you use?
Right.
Couldn't tell me. So, I mean, we're going to use fossil fuels.
Well, but with the 18-wheelers, too. I know that was a big push.
Oh, yeah. It's simple with those.
Right. Yeah. And that's the biggest polluter, right? The natural gas for 18-wheelers would make a lot of sense. Energy policy, environmental policy.
Shit.
And it's cheap.
Something I've got to ask you, and I'm not... When you start talking, I will start learning, okay? Because I'm not educated on this, but I see the cyber attacks from China, from Russia, from Iran, and I think, I don't quite see them. Where are they?
Yeah.
But they're out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And then they tell me that, one, they can shut down all of our power. Then I hear, well, not all our power. They could shut down California. Oops, that's plenty. But with a bomb over the United States strategically located, it could get all of it.
Yeah.
Can I go to bed at night and not have to worry about that?
Well, I'm afraid that's the future of warfare. You described two different types of attacks. One, a bomb over the atmosphere would be an electromagnetic pulse, an EMP, which would fry all electronics. So
it would get it.
As Iran gets closer to bomb, that concerns us. Cyber attack, the three main actors, well, four. Russia hits us in a criminal way quite a bit. China has breached us, stole all of our security clearances, and a big data theft. North Korea shut down Sony. And Iran, since we put the sanctions on them, have been hitting our financial sector every single day. What we're most concerned about is, you know, the theft of IP, the espionage, the criminal hacking, the credit card, Target, Home Depot. But, the thing that keeps me up at night the most would be a cyber attack that would shut things down. For instance, the power grid.
You're talking about for the United States.
Well, it can happen. Russia shut down Estonia. They shut down the entire country. We have that offensive capability. I've seen it. That capability turned against us, and it's a matter of time. As a jihadist world tries to get a hold of this technology, even more concerned because the intent's real high. They just don't have the capability just yet. But with that capability, you can shut down things like the power grid, like water, energy, FAA, mess up the airplanes. All sorts of things you can do with cyber that could be highly destructive. Imagine an attack on the New York Stock Exchange where you create economic chaos. Remember we had a glitch in the system that one day.
Oh yeah.
And we had a couple hours of chaos. It turned out to be not a cyber attack, but what if that was a cyber attack? Everybody's money tied up in the stock exchange and the economic chaos. And remember, you know, they hit three symbols on 9/11. One was political, they missed that, the capital. One was military, they hit that, the Pentagon. The other one was the economic symbol, and that was the World Trade Center. But really, that's an office building. The real economic symbol is the New York Stock Exchange. Don't think that that's not going to be a target in the future at some point.
I've got to get educated on this. One of two things. I've either got to understand it better than I do, or ignore it and let somebody else.
No, you can't put your head in the sand. I'll be happy to.
I'm working on some other things. Okay.
Thanks, man.
Sure. I'm glad Chairman Mike McCall of Texas talked to us today. I'm not sure what we should worry about more, cybersecurity, ISIS, or the electric grid. We will keep learning together. Thanks for listening to the Pickens Podcast. We'll be back with another edition soon.